Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, it's Gabe time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's Gabe time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
Off and rolling Wednesday, August 14th, 2024 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman, Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning929. Connor, how's it going?
What's up, man?
Nothing much. How's it going?
It's going all right.
Okay. All right. Good to hear. Good to hear.
Almost football season.
Thanks for asking me as well. I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right.
I've never asked you that. That's not this bit. That's not how this works.
It's usually what's up.
That's not how this works.
I say, how are you? What's up? That's usually, it's not the right answer.
Oh, did I throw you too much of a curveball by saying I'm all right?
This is just normal.
Was that too?
You know what, honestly, Connor?
Did I ad lib? How about some yes and, Gabe Kuhn?
You know what? Connor, this has been brewing for a while. I've been thinking about this for a while, and today is the day I have to say something about it.
It's been boiling over. Yes. He never asks how I'm doing. Yeah. I'm the host.
Yeah. I'm being a little prima donna today, but hey, we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open on overreaction, not an overreaction, but we have plenty more where that comes from, because the Minnesota Vikings are dropping like freaking flies this offseason. Good God. J.J. McCarthy is going to be out for the season because he had to get a full meniscus repair, which I want to discuss here at the bottom half of this hour. Not normal to be out for an entire season because of a meniscus tear, but you just sort of wonder if they're being overly cautious. But also, you sent me this before the show even started. Jordan Addison went down with an ankle injury today. That's on top of...
He wasn't the only one.
Three cornerbacks.
Yep.
I mean, they are struggling. They are struggling to get out of the gate this season. But we'll talk about that. And we'll also have some more NFL news on top. And overreaction, not an overreaction. We're going to talk about these contract disputes with wide receivers. Are you getting tired of them? You like me a little bit?
I think, to be quite honest, I always find contract disputes an interesting story. It's just about the same guys.
Yes, but it's like
it's getting stale.
We have been doing this with Brandon Ayuk for the better part of 4 months, right?
Look, it feels longer than that.
Yes.
It really does.
And then we've been doing it with CeeDee Lamb for the better part of, what, since last year, midseason? Like, good God. But we'll talk about those. And I'll give a hardline stance for the first time, I think, today about what I think on both of those contract disputes. As far as guests are concerned, we're going to have David Cobb at 5 o'clock from CBS Sports talking college football, college basketball. We'll get to some Memphis football. We'll also talk about Texas football. They had another injury. They have a torn Achilles in their running back room on top of C.J. Baxter tearing his ACL, their starting running back. That running back room is looking thinner and thinner by the day, and we've had the discussions about teams in the top 10 that ultimately fall out and are unranked by the end of the season. Again, I don't think Texas is going to fit that billing, but I think they could fall out of the top 10 relatively quickly with that new SEC schedule, something I want to discuss with David. At 6 o'clock, we'll bring on a guy by the name of Tim Kramsey, Memphis offensive coordinator and also quarterback coach. He coached one of the best offenses in the country last year at Memphis. He has all these returning players. What does he think about how they have been pacing through camp? And I got to say, Connor, these are I feel for the guys out there because we had a little bit of rain early this morning, and then it just gets more humid. These are the dog days of camp. Your body hurts like hell. You have to get up at the wee hours of the morning, 5:30, 6 a.m., go get rehab, go to the training room, eat nasty eggs for the 15th time already. I mean, these are the dog days of camp. I feel for the guys over there, but it seems like they're doing relatively well. We'll talk to Tim about how they're pacing the way. We'll hop into the Blitz around 6:30, where we have to discuss a story about the starting quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. He has a new cologne, and he's owning the bit. The mayonnaise bit, Parfum de Mayonnaise, is his new cologne. $8 a bottle. I looked earlier, sold out. No. Like that, just absolutely not. We'll also talk about Hard Knocks. I'll give you my review of Episode 2 and Episode 1. Episode 2 dropped last night. Juan Soto had a great game last night. 3 home runs and 4 at-bats. He is the reason that the Yankees got over top of the White Sox. And then we have an update on Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor looks like he won't fight in 2024, but Dana White's trying to keep some hope out there that he may fight again at some point in his career. Although, I think there's a discussion to be had about combat sports and guys overstaying their welcome. But we'll talk about all that around 6:30 before we get out for the day. But as of right now, we start every Wednesday show this way. Let's get to Overreaction, Not an Overreaction.
Now, it's Overreaction or Not an Overreaction.
We are the Wild and Crazy Guys.
That's crazy.
Chill, homie.
On the Gabe Cujo from 92.9.
All right, Gabe. NFL contract situations. It was reported that Brandon Ayuk continued his hold-in today, but he was seen in 49ers gear and had discussions with John Lynch, George Kittle, and others. Brandon Ayuk will not play for the 49ers this season. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
I'm going to say overreaction.
Ooh.
I just think we have seen way too many different teams he's tied to where the trade has not ultimately gone through. How many days in a row have we heard that the Steelers have their package all figured out to go acquire Brandon Ayuk? And we don't get a yes. We don't get any, you know, overwhelming sources telling us that he's going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. I am just of the opinion, this is my strongest take on the situation, if it was going to happen, it would have happened by now. And the part of this that always has stuck in my brain is the fact it took a long time for Brandon Ayuk to even request a trade. He's just mad with the fact that the front office doesn't want to pay him the premier wide receiver money. He'll still get somewhere in the $20 million per year, $25 million per year range, and he'd have a chance to win a Super Bowl. And we have seen Brandon Ayuk this offseason. It was in May. He said that he absolutely wants to play for the 49ers. So he is still trying, I think him and his agent are still trying everything they can to get the worth that they want and play for the 49ers. I think he will play for them. I think their offense would take a slight step back if he was not there. I think the 49ers understand that. They have not been wanting to trade him this entire time. They expect him to be in a 49ers uniform. But I'm just of the opinion, if it was going to happen, it would have happened by now. The fact that we're 4 or 5 months down this road, it was the end of the NFL season last year where we were starting to have these conversations and nothing has actually transpired. I mean, I am also of the opinion, like, don't really tell me anything new. Like, don't give me reports about Brandon Ayuk till we have some concrete evidence of where he's going to play next year. But if it was going to happen, him going elsewhere outside of San Francisco would have happened. And this also is worth noting. He does have a house that he bought on the West Coast last year. Now, it's not in the Bay Area. It's his off-season home. But I think it's in Reno. It's in Nevada. So, you know, going across the country with a house in Reno, I don't know what you would do with that house. If you'd go buy wherever you would go. If you went to the Steelers, would you buy a house in Pittsburgh? But he bought a house on the West Coast to stay close to the Bay Area, stay close to the 49ers organization. I think that's where he wants to end up, even though we've heard a lot of different things.
I agree with you. I think he wants to be a 49er. He just feels disrespected because they won't pay him the amount of money that he believes he has earned. So hopefully they can come to an agreement and he can play for the 49ers, because I still think that it's the best spot for him. They are certainly better with him. And I said it yesterday, I want to see him as a 49er. My second choice would be the Steelers, but it just feels like the Steelers' offer isn't really what the 49ers necessarily want. So, like you said, if that deal is going to be done, it feels like it would have happened by now. You know, it's very possible that they are still discussing a deal, but it's now been 48 hours of the same report of, yes, like, oh, there's a deal on the table and they're just waiting for the commitment from the 49ers. And it's like, well, if it's been 2 days or probably longer than that, it just feels like, is that commitment ever actually going to come from the 49ers side?
I think the obvious choice that Brandon Ayuk has to make: do I want to take the most money and not compete for championships, or take a little less money and compete for championships with the 49ers? Like, it's that simple for him at this particular moment. It doesn't seem like the 49ers are going to get up there in the Patriots range of $32 million per year, or even in the Browns range of $28 to $30 million per year. They'll probably be right under that. So just decide for yourself at this point. We're getting way too late into camp for you to continue to sort of milk this situation. There just does come a point. Decide what you want for your career going forward. Do you want the most money, or do you want to win championships? I think it's pretty simple.
Next up, CeeDee Lamb. His deal will get done before week one. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Not an overreaction, ooh, believe it or not. Not an overreaction. I just think there's way too much pressure on the Cowboys organization right now. And I don't think Jerry, as much as he wants to be the front-facing guy for the Dallas Cowboys organization, I think there are other people in that front office like, dude, one, stop talking so much, because we make the decisions. We're going to pay this guy at some point. We just have to get through negotiations with his agent. And the more you talk, Jerry, the harder you make it on us. The harder you make it on us. So I think that CeeDee Lamb is going to get the contract, because the Cowboys brass and the coaches and the team, they all know that that team doesn't stand a chance in the playoffs, or really this season, without CeeDee Lamb in their corner. He caught for 1,700 yards and 12 touchdowns last year. He had 135 receptions. He's an absolute target eater. So in the end of the day, I think there's just way too much pressure and way too much on the line for the Cowboys not to pay him by week one. And also, I think there's something to be said about Micah Parsons. Him and CD are relatively close, and Micah Parsons keeps standing by the fact, yeah, you may think that it looks bleak right now, but I'm telling you, by week one, we'll have this whole thing ironed out and he'll be in pads. But I do think for both these situations, Connor, something that's going under the radar is, like, when they actually return to the particular team that they're going to be on, whether it's CeeDee Lamb with the Cowboys, Brandon Ayuk with the 49ers, there's going to be a little bit of, like, one, what's their conditioning like? How much work have they been doing away from the facility? There's not that many players in the NFL outside of, like, Tom Brady that get their helmet and their pads and do everything in their backyard. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a lot of guys that do that. So I think there's that. I think the timing with their particular quarterbacks could be thrown off a little bit. I know that they have some synergy, some chemistry already. Brock Purdy with Brandon Ayuk, Dak Prescott with CeeDee Lamb. But still, the timing of everything, it takes a little bit of time to iron that stuff out, and I think that could be a problem. And then the last thing, I am curious about their mindsets, because I think right this second, both of them feel spurned. Both of them feel like they're being mistreated. So even if they get the contracts that they want, and they have to face all of those questions when they sign a particular contract, what's their response going to be? Because I think the good guys, the guys that are focused on the task at hand, that are going to go try to win in the National Football League, they'll say, you know, all that stuff's ironed out, we're moving forward. But these particular guys, they've gone through an entire offseason or two where they've been trying to get paid and they have not gotten paid. Are they still frustrated even when they get the contract? So I think there's going to be some questions about both these guys, regardless of if they get signed back by their team or not, if they sign extensions.
I also think it's got to, at least in the Cowboys situation, it extends out beyond guys like CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, and Dak Prescott. Those players who are due to be paid in the upcoming years are probably in the back of their mind saying, wait a second, if those three guys can't get paid by this organization, in which you could argue those are the three best players on our team, and I think that most
not
people
even
would,
argue. I think there's no argument. Are,
no, that's actually the correct answer. It's probably Mike Cassidy.
Trayvon Diggs, but he already got paid.
Right, but he already got paid. The locker room, it's got to be a weird environment because people are like, this team's just not taking care of the people they're supposed to. Period.
Yeah, if
and
you
they
look
have
around,
$10 billion.
Yeah, if I am, I don't know, Tyler Smith, right? The tackle they took out of Tulsa a couple years ago, who's been playing really well, and I look around at my surroundings and I look at how the front office has treated these three guys, I am questioning very heavily how the hell are they going to treat me? I want my value. If I ask for my value, are they going to continue to just like kick the can down the road? And leave me out there spiraling, trying to figure out where I'm going to land next?
We're in no rush.
No urgency.
No urgency.
Absolutely no urgency to get it done. We miss you, okay? Okay? We miss you, damn it. But
I'll send you some Nobu.
I think that's a really good point. I think there's a lot of people in that organization on that roster right now that are going to side with CD. And with that, they're saying, if you're not treating CeeDee Lamb, one of the best wide receivers in the game, Dak Prescott, one of the best quarterbacks in the game, Micah Parsons, one of the best edges in the game, if you're not treating them equitably, how are you going to treat me, man? How are you going to treat me? I'm the backup right guard, right? Or I'm the starting right guard. How are you going to treat me?
Right. From the NFL to college football, with the House versus NCAA case, there is a new roster construction process that all schools in college football we'll have to deal with. There is a roster limit. Instead of 120 roster spots, they are going to have 105, and they will have the ability to give a scholarship to everyone on the team. This is a good thing for college football. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
I think a very severe overreaction, quite frankly.
Agreed.
I think this is a bad thing. I think it's a good thing for the top of the sport, for the most part.
Absolutely.
They're going to be able to just roster everybody, and the depth that they will have will even exceed what they have right now. They can sign, let's see, 85 to 105. They can sign 20 more 4- or 5-star prospects and keep them away from their rivals. What that's going to do is even more than we've seen in the past. It's going to make college football even more top-heavy. And we've been talking about it for years. Like, everybody wants more parity, although we don't. I think that we do debate parity in college football, although we don't necessarily want that much parity, because when Cincinnati was in the college football playoff, I don't know if those ratings were as high, blah, 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 blah. But it's just going to feed the Alabamas, Georgias, you know, Ohio States, Michigans of the world. It just puts more players on their respective roster on a full scholarship. But when you look at a team like Memphis, that doesn't help them. It doesn't help them. Sure, yeah, you can sign a few more 3-stars. And try to develop them. But how much time are you going to have to develop them if you have three guys ahead of them? And, you know, I think a lot of those bottom-rung guys on these rosters in the group of five or lower power five are just going to be going to school after school after school to find a spot where they fit. So I don't think it's a good thing. I really don't. And then, you know, Ryan Silverfield actually spoke on it yesterday when he was asked about it. And I thought his response was relatively telling. When it comes down to it, he basically said nobody in college football, nobody, you know, the higher ups in college football asked us how we think about roster management and what we think about 105 guys all on full scholarship. Most of them disagree with it, yet we're still doing it, which is strange to me because I feel like the coach's opinion should probably come into play here. And then also, on the back end of this whole thing, and we've been talking about this for a while, walk-ons are going to be a thing of the past. You know how many good walk-on stories were here at Memphis?
Anthony Miller,
Phil Mayhew, Alan Cross. You just keep, I mean, Daryl Henderson almost was a walk-on. The dude was a gray shirt where he had to stay back a year and then could take a scholarship. Like, there's a lot of these guys on the bubble that have been preferred walk-ons. They might recruit over them and go find guys that have stars next to their names instead. And where does that leave guys like that? Again, I don't think there's a great solution to, you know, roster management in college football to make the parity a little bit better. But at the same time, this is not the answer. I can tell you this right now. This right here, 105 guys on full scholarship, roster limits, is not the answer. I will miss going into the future the great walk-on stories that we've always had. That stinks. That really stinks.
In my opinion, it's going to really hurt teams like Memphis, the ones that are kind of right underneath the next group of teams, because it just feels like that the four or five-star guys that they are able to get that might not be going to these upper schools, they would come to Memphis. And it just feels like now a few of those guys are going to get taken away. So it's those middle-tier teams, the ones that are right there, that's going to impact them negatively.
Yes. But again, top of the sport impacted positively. We had, situation after situation unfold with NIL and transfer portal. Nick Saban said, I'm not going to complain about it because it's going to help me, but I will complain about it on behalf of the people that don't have the same resources as us.
Right.
So you're just continuing down this path that we've always gone down of continuing to strengthen the top of the sport and letting the rest of the sport sort of wither away. And I don't like it.
All right, final one. The Grizzlies will be opening their training camp in Nashville as the FedEx Forum is going through changes. They will return to FedEx Forum by the end of training camp, but we know that Nashville is a hotbed for growth in sports teams. They've been in discussions for an MLB team on top of the Titans and the Predators. With that, we should be worried about the Grizzlies moving across the state. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Overreaction, man. Good God. The reason that they're going to be practicing in Nashville is because they got what they want from the state and the funding they needed to get FedEx Forum renovated. So the city of Memphis has shown the ability to invest in the Grizzlies. It's our only pro sports team. If they go to Nashville, I don't even know what that would look like. I don't know who would latch on to that team. And I think it's very rare, just generally speaking, for a team to go from the same state to the same state, just to move across the state.
Has it ever happened?
No, it doesn't happen. So I think this is a severe overreaction. I know some people are discussing it. I understand what Nashville is. Like, it's a rich place. You can get everything you want possibly done business-wise in the city of Nashville. But I think when the Grizzlies look at it, yeah, it may look attractive as a city, but you'd be the second tenant in Bridgestone Arena behind the Nashville Predators. You wouldn't have your own home, right? You'd be sharing it. And I think here in Memphis, you have the fan support that you need. You really do. And I think, latching on to the small market, latching on to a city that absolutely adores you, that's something that we need to continue to do in professional sports.
Yeah, I just have no real worries about this right now. The Grizzlies in 2013, they had training camp in Nashville. It's something that they have done before. If you go and you look at Drew Hill's tweets, he's like, they're basically the space that they need. It's just being taken up right now by some of the renovations going on. I don't know specific what renovations are happening, but that is believable to me. I don't have a grand worry about the Grizzlies moving to Nashville, especially when it's been very clear that the Grizzlies have had open conversation with the city and they're getting the renovations. They've been in those discussions. I also just, at the end of the day, cannot imagine the NBA taking a team from Memphis and moving it to Nashville. That just feels so faux pas to me. They have talked about how the Seattle move to Oklahoma City was such a disaster for PR purposes, and I just don't. It would be even worse if you took a team from a city and moved it to a different city in the same state, and you're just like, well, it's bigger. Like, that's not a good enough excuse.
You piss off your loyal fan base.
Yes. Well, you would lose.
And you have to bring in, I know, you think, you're in the same state, they'll still latch on. People from Memphis will still love the Grizzlies. I don't know if that's how that would go.
I'd have a second thought.
People would be pissed off.
I'd have a second thought.
People would be very angry. So I think you would, completely spurn your most loyal fans, and you'd have to build up a new fan base in Nashville, and there's more distractions there. You have the country music scene. You have the Titans. You have the Preds. Like, you have more distractions there than you have in the city of Memphis. Right now, you have the full attention of this city on that franchise.
Right.
Because there's no other pro sports team. So just keep it that way. I think it's pretty simple. But I saw people discussing this. We threw it in there just for the sake of throwing it in there. I don't think there's any worry at all.
No. There is no evidence right now for the Grizzlies moving to Nashville. Just because the Grizzlies might do an appearance in Nashville or a practice, I don't think that
I don't mind that. Because you're trying to make it a more home state team than just the city of Memphis.
We don't have to go from like, oh my God, they're in Nashville. They're moving there. It's like, I don't know. Maybe they're just practicing.
Yeah, and also, again, the FedEx Forum.
There's also a very real reason.
Yeah, the FedEx Forum got the money for renovations. You don't usually take money invest it into a stadium or an arena when you're going to plan on going elsewhere. You usually don't do that.
I just want more transparency, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, no.
That's all I want. I want some transparency here.
Oh, gosh. I think they're pretty transparent with us. We can argue about the injury report once we get into season, but this one, I don't think there's any need for transparency because it's pretty obvious what's happening here. They're getting renovations done. Their space taken up. They can't use their home gym, so they're going to use a gym. I think they're going to be in a high school for a couple of days, and then they're going to maybe go to Bridgestone.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The red carpet is not being rolled out for the Grizzlies by the city of Nashville. If Nashville wanted them to come down,
they'd build a whole bunch of different things to try to attract the Grizzlies there. But no, they're putting them in a damn high school. Don't worry about it. Not a big deal in the slightest. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. And when we come back, we have pretty massive injury news from a rookie quarterback. J.J. McCarthy, with that torn meniscus, went through repairs today, went under the knife, and it looks like he'll be out for the season. I'll give you my reaction and what I think of the situation coming up next. The Minnesota Vikings are absolutely going through it this offseason. They had a cornerback they drafted early in the NFL draft pass away in a car accident. They've had two cornerbacks go down, one potentially for the entire year. And now it looks like J.J. McCarthy, their first round pick in the 2024 NFL draft, he has undergone meniscus repair surgery. There were two options whenever we heard this news. One was a meniscus trim, which means it's not all that damaged, and that would require about 4 to 6 weeks of recovery. The other is a full meniscus repair, where you have to put it all back together, and it is relatively damaged. That takes 4 to 6 months. That's where they sew it all back together. He got that one. He's going to be out for 4 to 6 months, which will leave him out for the entire regular season. Now, generally speaking, I can tell you about meniscus. I'm not a doctor by any stretch of the imagination, but I've seen a lot of people tear their meniscus. Usually it doesn't leave you out this long. But I think what happened was they went in to look at it, scoped it, and saw, damn, this thing is way more damaged than we think. But we're talking about a guy in the first year of his rookie contract with, four more years after this season to really make his presence known, make his presence felt as the starting quarterback and franchise quarterback for this franchise. And they have a gap year going on right now. They just signed Justin Jefferson. They have Jordan Addison on team control. They're going to wait till next year. I think this is really just an overly cautious approach. I bet there is a possibility, generally, what I have seen, when you get the meniscus repair, that person could recover relatively easily, come back in about 3 months. But I don't think they're going to even take a chance with him. They're just going to rehab it, try to make it happen for him. Now, one thing about this meniscus, when you have a full repair, that is the cartilage in your knee, right? So this could be something he deals with the rest of his career. I've seen that commonly be an occurrence in football locker rooms and seeing how people that have meniscus injuries operate. This could be something that plagues him for the rest of his career, but we shall see how it all happens and how this all takes place. Now, with that, Sam Darnold is going to be the starting quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings going into this year. And the question that will remain until we get to season and see him play is, can he have a career revitalization that he has not been able to have with the Carolina Panthers, didn't have it with the Jets, was not able to make it happen, even with the 49ers? So that's going to be the question until we see him play. When we look at what he has done in his last 17 starts, just not that good. Just really not that good. He has had a 59.8% completion percentage, 302 for 505, 3,390 passing yards, and a 17-game sample size, 16 touchdowns passing to 16 interceptions. He's had 8 rush TDs, 6 fumbles lost, and he has a 77.25 passer rating. I am going to bet against him revitalizing his career like we've seen with Geno Smith and guys like that, Baker Mayfield, people that were picked very high in the NFL draft. The one thing that I think does help him, though, is the fact that you have a guy by the name of Justin Jefferson on your side. If Sam Darnold knows what's good for him, he's going to lean on him like you wouldn't believe. target him some more, and you could potentially revitalize your career. But with Sam Darnold, the amount of opportunities we've seen him sort of blow in his young NFL career, I just do not think that he's going to be the guy we're talking about as a, you know, potential comeback player of the year Pro Bowler like we've seen with Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield the past two seasons.
Have you seen, there have been a few rumors, Scott Erickson on Twitter has reported that the Vikings have inquired about Saints quarterback Derek Carr. Now,
okay.
That being said, Derek Carr has a no-trade clause.
Yeah.
So he would have to agree to want to go to Minnesota. But the idea of it is that the Saints have been really impressed with Spencer Rattler, and maybe the Vikings would make a move for him. But to be honest, I'm like, I don't know if you're the Vikings if you would make that move, because you don't necessarily have to be good this year, and I would rather let Sam Darnold do it and then wait on J.J. McCarthy.
You gave up on the Kirk Cousins era. You're in a gap year.
Yep.
I don't think anybody in Minnesota has visions of grandeur right now that they're going to be some great team.
No.
They gave up their whole defense. Danielle Hunter's no longer there. You don't have the pieces that you've had to be able to go win 10, 11, 12 games. So I think most of the fan base has accepted, hey, this is a gap year. Then we'll get J.J. McCarthy in there, potential franchise quarterback. Then we will move forward. You have Justin Jefferson locked up. Jordan Addison went down with an ankle injury. That's another part of the Vikings' issues that they have seen early in camp and just through this offseason. But it looks like he'll be okay. You have a good wide receiver core. You've been building that offensive line. You have J.J. McCarthy for team control for 4 more years. I think you just sort of, I'm not going to say give up on this year, but use this as a gap year, and then know going into the future you're going to be taken care of. And that should be when you're rebuilt and ready to go win in the NFC. I don't think it's that complicated of a situation.
I agree. There is no real reason to trade for Derek Carr, because it's like, okay, you haven't, now it's like you might sneak into the playoffs, but you're not really going to go anywhere. Here's the thing. As a Grizzlies fan, after the season that we've just experienced, my heart goes out to the Minnesota Vikings, because it is actually unbelievable how every single practice it's just like, oh, well, we lost 4 more guys. It's like, how is this? They're going to run out of people. They're going to run out of people.
Yeah, and with Derek Carr, like, the Saints thing, the way this has all turned out for him, when they thought, okay, this is going to be the guy that steps in after Drew Brees and helps us continue to be a playoff team, I just don't buy into him anymore. I don't. He's had a decent career to this point, but I think his best ball is behind him. I think he would be better in a Kevin O'Connell system. You're going to have a lot more play action, which is what he does well, and you have a premier target there in Justin Jefferson. But here's the other part of it. He's on a 4-year, $150 million deal through 2026. Do you really want to take on that money while you have J.J. McCarthy? Isn't the point of drafting J.J. McCarthy to have a cost-controlled quarterback for the next 4 to 5 years?
Exactly.
Why would you bring in a guy that's worth $30 million a year plus just to sort of bridge the gap between that and next year and J.J. McCarthy? It wouldn't make any sense.
Well, even it wouldn't make sense
for the Saints,
Vikings.
I don't think it would make sense.
I was about to say, a couple of good practices from Spencer Rattler isn't going to cause me to go, you know what, Derek Carr, we don't need you anymore.
Yeah, and for the Saints, it's like, yeah, I like Spencer Rattler. And I actually think highly of Spencer Rattler.
Right. Not time to give him the keys yet, though.
No, hell no, brother. Come on. And you want to have some type of, he'll be an insurance policy on Derek Carr if Derek Carr stinks this year again. But I don't see any reason this move would be made for both sides. It doesn't make sense for both sides.
No.
Because the Vikings have no visions of being some playoff team that sneaks into the Super Bowl that needs a quarterback right this second. They'll be fine.
Where is Jameis Winston now?
With the Browns, actually.
Oh, that's right. I was about to say, I had a moment.
Now, something like that would make more sense,
yeah.
Right?
At least you get fun pressers at the end of the day.
You get someone eating W's, man. Come on. Like that, and he's not getting paid a lot. Something like that would make a whole lot more sense. But to do that, to go into the Derek Carr 4-year, $150 million contract for 2 years while you have a quarterback that's baking in the oven right now that you expect to take over the franchise that's still young, dumb as hell.
Have you seen that meme where it's like, accidentally became important at work and it's ruining my life?
And know what's funny about that conversation? The fact that J.J. McCarthy wasn't even the listed starter.
No.
So they haven't lost their starter.
Yeah.
They lost what they thought would be their eventual starter just for the year.
Sam Darnold keeps going to places thinking he's going to be the backup. They're like, hey, guess what? You're the starter. He's like, no! He's like, this won't
well,
stop.
I don't think he has any problems with it, to be honest.
I don't know. We talked about it yesterday. Being a backup quarterback in the NFL.
That's nice.
Pretty good job. Pretty good job.
You get paid. Case Keenum. Case Keenum's made a hell of a lot of money doing that. But, I don't know. Speaking of Case Keenum, kick the tire. Is he in the league still? He had a good year. He was part of the Minnesota Miracle with Stephon Diggs. You know who was delivering that ball in the playoffs? That was
Texans.
That was Case Keenum.
Texans.
Kick the tires on Case Keenum.
36
Bring
years old.
Bring him back to the Minnesota Vikings.
He's been dead for 6 years and somehow he's still playing football.
Capture the old glory with Case Keenum, playoff performer of the century.
He threw last year, 2023, here are his stats, 291 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions, 61.1 rating. He's ready to go.
That is a pro's pro. When we're talking about a second or third string quarterback, that is a pro's pro.
He's ready to go.
Yeah. He's primed and ready to make something happen.
Good for him.
Minnesota Vikings, pick up the phone. Case Keenum's out there for the taking.
He's been on 8 different teams.
Well, yeah.
One of them, the Vikings. Oh, like you said, 2017.
Well,
yeah.
I remember him starting for the St. Louis Rams. Can you give me those stats really quick?
Oh, yes, I probably could.
Give me those stats. I remember going to the Edward Jones Dome and watching Case Keenum as the starting quarterback for the St. Louis Rams.
All right, he had 828 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception.
Oh, good TD to interception ratio.
138 yards per game, 87.7 rating. QBR, take a guess.
I don't know, 100?
34.
Holy God. Well, I mean, you could also insulate that.
By accident, I think you could do better than 34.
You could insulate that by, that was the Jeff Fisher era.
This is his QBRs.
Zach Stacy was running for 1,000 yards at that point.
This man's QBRs are wild.
What, are they up and down? Is it like
a
roller coaster?
It's just consistently is it possibly this low? It's like 48.
Even that year with the Vikings?
Dude, 48. I'm just going to go through his career real quick. 48, 39, 34, 37, 73.
That's got to be the year with the
Vikings.
That's the Vikings. Yes.
44, 45, 34, 42, 4, 21.
Yep. Yep. He's still up there at the top of the passing yards list for the NCAA history. Because he was with Houston, with Kevin Sumlin and all those guys. He was slinging the ball around, buddy. Yeah, I think he led. He had the single season record for a while. But then it got broken by Colt Brennan and that whole thing. And I think Timmy Chang might be the leading passer in the history of college athletics.
He came in second comeback player of the year in 2017.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I don't know the funny thing about Case Keenum with that being in second, what did he come back from? Just being a bad quarterback? can you come back from just being a bad quarterback?
I don't know if that's QBR was 37 the year before, so they were probably like, oh my God. Is that the year? Oh, it's the year he turned 30, too. That's what. Came back
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
The dead.
Now, speaking of somebody coming back from the dead, great transition here. The Commanders have signed a wide receiver, a veteran wide receiver, and I don't even know if we can really call him a veteran because he's been out of football for 6 years. But do you remember Martavis Bryant?
Do I remember?
From the Steelers.
Oh, yeah.
The next guy in line, we thought he was going to be great until he started smoking a bunch of weed and got caught on a bunch of tests.
Stay off the weed.
And by the way, here's the thing about the way it works in the NFL. When you are a repeat offender, they tell you when you're going to get tested. So the fact that he kept failing all of those tests, that's a testament to him. Impressive stuff. They told you you're going to get tested for marijuana, and you just walked in and just peed a hole in the cup anyway. You didn't give a damn.
Peed a hole in the cup?
Yeah, peed a hole directly in the cup, because that was he had high THC levels, buddy.
I have never heard that phrase before.
Okay, well, now you've heard it. But he's back with back in the NFL with the Commanders. Coming back from the... I don't expect anything out of the guy. At this point, he's 32 years old. Last time he played meaningful snaps in the NFL was 2018.
Oof.
He was a 26-year-old man at that point. Like, this is a guy who I thought big things of when he was with the Steelers, alongside Antonio Brown. But this was a guy who just completely derailed his career because he didn't want to get right. Didn't want to get right. Stay off the weed. He couldn't do it.
Taking 6 years off and being like, I'm ready to come back.
Well, no, he's had the Cowboys, I think, signed him last year for a little bit to the practice squad.
Let me see if I can find some stats.
I think he got signed to the practice squad.
But practice squad?
Yeah.
He's ready to go.
Yeah, but he's, man.
His last actual game was 2018 with the Oakland Raiders.
I hate it, too, because this is 6'4", 211, out of Clemson. He was a high pick. I think
so
it was a second-round pick.
He was so good.
And it's like, he ran a 4-4, ran every route in the route tree, did really well alongside Antonio Brown with the Steelers.
8 touchdowns his rookie season.
He got suspended for a year. He came back, did not give the Steelers what they wanted. Then they traded him. He went to Oakland for a little bit, couldn't really get anything done with the Raiders. This is a waste. He has been one of the bigger wastes of... a massive talent in quite a while. I mean, this is a guy who really could have been one of the premier wide receivers in the league and just shot himself in the foot every step.
It reminds me of Josh Gordon.
Yeah.
Talk about a guy that can play.
I'll say this about Josh Gordon. At least Josh Gordon had that, what?
One
1,600-yard receiving season. Martavis Bryant was never able to do that because he could never stay on the field long enough because he was failing too many drug tests. Josh Gordon at least had some really good production in his day.
2013, he was on my fantasy team. I may have had the greatest fantasy team of all time that year. I had Demaryius Thomas. I had Peyton Manning. I had Josh Gordon. I had Jamal Charles. It was unbelievable. I was beating the living hell out of people. It was the first time I've ever played, too.
Yep.
He had 1,600 yards that year. God, 9 touchdowns.
Was it in 15 games or 16 games?
14 games.
14 games?
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
That's a blast from the past. I haven't thought about Josh Gordon in a while.
Oh, that's crazy.
Man. Last time I caught up with him, he was playing in the fan-controlled football league. He had a fall from grace. We know about that.
His football reference page is fascinating to look at because it's just gap, huge production. Gap, 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 huge production. Like, when he played, he was a weapon.
I remember
a weapon.
And obviously, there is part of me that feels for Josh Gordon, because he just really had substance abuse issues.
Right.
Whether it was,
right,
you know, cocaine or marijuana or alcohol in general. I mean, he came back that one year for the Seahawks, played really well, but then had to step away because he was having mental health issues and he was diving back into the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was stories about him with the Browns showing up to practice after drinking a fifth of tequila. Browns have had way too many stories like that, haven't they? Johnny Manziel and him.
It's hard to work for the Browns.
That's enough. Now, Chiefs wide receiver, moving on to another wide receiver. Hollywood Brown is expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks with a sternoclavicular. Sternoclavicular. I said that right. Injury he suffered. Opening night's 3 weeks away from this Thursday. So he's going to be out for the first couple of, weeks of the season. But I think the Chiefs will get by fine. Chiefs will get by just fine. Javier Worthy has looked really good in camp. You have Rashee Rice, even though he had a crazy offseason. Travis Kelce still, kicking, doing his thing. I think they'll be just fine without Hollywood Brown. But once Hollywood Brown gets back into that lineup, the amount of speed on that roster, the amount of speed on that offense, is going to be so terrifying.
How much different is it going to look from the last few years of Chiefs, because it has been, it's been a different type of passing style that they've had. Like, they haven't had the burners like they'll
have
this year.
Well, what they've resorted to, and this has actually been a good thing for Patrick Mahomes, he's got to dump it down a whole lot more.
Uh-huh.
He's not, you know, exposing the back end of the field. He's not exposing the back end of the defensive back.
They're not taking risk.
They're not taking a whole bunch of risk. With these two guys, if you have Xavier Worthy and him on the field, Hollywood Brown on the field at the same time, they're going to take a lot of deep shots.
A lot of underneath things for Travis Kelce, too.
They have not had that speed since Tyreek Hill left. They haven't. And then Rashee Rice will take all the intermediate and short routes. But these guys also, too, with like Xavier Worthy, just give him a now route out in space and let him go run a 4-2-1 down the sideline. I don't think that would be that complicated. But this offense, I still think, especially once Hollywood Brown comes back, is going to take a step up in the right direction, which should be scary for the rest of the league, because that defense was number one or number two in total defense most of last season. That's why they ended up winning a Super Bowl. They're back to back.
How much continuity do they have on the defensive side? Is it mostly the same squad?
Outside of L'Jarius Sneed, they're fine. They're really good. Trent McDuffie's probably going to step into another All-Pro season. They're just the same. They're the exact same.
Are they there?
And you still have Spags calling defense, which I think is the most important thing, especially when we talk about his playoff resume.
Right. Would they be your Super Bowl pick right now?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
I know how hard it is to three-peat. I mean, I say unfortunately because it's just like sometimes you want something new.
Well,
you just want something new.
It kind of happened with the Warriors at some point, and it happened with the Patriots.
It's any franchise who does that level. It's like the Patriots. Any level
right.
of just sustained championship winning, you want to see somebody else step in and beat that team eventually.
Yes, I agree with that. But I'm also saying that I'm not going to pick against them until I see them lose. Like, you kind of have to assume that they're going to be there until they lose. Because they've just done it consistently.
What's frustrating, because with that, with what you're saying there, the Chiefs lost last year. The Chiefs did not play that well during the regular season.
Oh, I mean like the game.
Oh, until they lose in the playoffs.
I'm talking about like lose, yes, that's what I mean.
You have to literally see the clock strike zero and them losing for you to believe that they can lose in the playoffs. But, they did not look like a put-together team.
Yeah, I'm not talking about game to game.
But let's rewind to last year. They did not look like a put-together team. Let's not forget about that.
No.
They were arguing on the sideline. Travis Kelce, I know he pushed Andy Reid in the Super Bowl. You know, they were mad at each other. They had some locker room. Kadarius Toney couldn't catch a ball.
Did Taylor Swift save the season?
They had to sideline him for the entire playoffs. Taylor Swift may have saved the season. I'll answer it that way. But even that team last year, that I thought was down and out by the time they got to the playoffs, they somehow figured it the hell out and made it happen. They have the best clutch performers, the best clutch coaching, and the best coaching in the NFL. And they also have a GM in Brett Veach who just somehow every single year finds diamonds in the rough, finds guys. That's the reason they're so successful. One, yeah, they've done good contracts. Patrick Mahomes' contract at the top of that. I know people see the $500 million and they think a different way, but that's $50 million a year. He's eighth or ninth right now in per-year valuation among quarterbacks, so that's a good contract. But then they just reload and find a bunch of cheap guys in the draft, and they perform for them. This Chiefs thing, I think we're getting close to sort of talking about them, if we aren't already, in that Patriots light.
Well, they took the blueprint.
We're really in that conversation at this point.
It's very similar. It's very similar. With the defense, with the quarterback, with the tight end.
Cost-controlled. Team-friendly contracts, the whole thing. It looks a little different. And and the other part that's very similar, two best quarterbacks probably in the history of the game, right?
Probably
I don't even think probably. Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady at the top of that list.
Has he gotten past like Montana, you think?
I think so.
I think that's fair.
Well, because and part of that's like, let's project
talent.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Let's project a little bit. Can we project?
Well, it's also just
I despise the conversations when somebody's still playing, when they're like, oh, he's not going to be able to catch him. Oh, he hasn't caught him yet. Well, if we're projecting based on what he's done in his career, winning MVPs, Super Bowl, two Super Bowl MVPs, three championships. If we're projecting, we think he's going to catch all these guys. I don't think there's any doubt in our minds.
And the guy he lost to just happened to be Tom Brady.
He's not even 30 yet. He's not even 30.
What am I doing with my life?
Like, there just comes a point where we can project that he's going to pass all these guys. And I think most people are of that understanding.
Yeah.
He's past Joe Montana. He's right there with Tom Brady. He's right there with Tom Brady. And I don't think, and this is another discussion that's always had, He doesn't have to get to 7 Super Bowls to catch Tom Brady. I'm sorry.
No, I don't think so.
We don't have to do that. We really don't have to do that.
Well, it's the same way as 11 rings isn't the bar for GOAT in the NBA. You know? Yeah,
it's just like LeBron doesn't need 6 championships to catch up to Michael Jordan. He doesn't need 11 rings to catch up to Bill Russell. He's already past Bill Russell. Let's be honest. So, like, it's the same conversation, but it's one that we always have when it comes to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs team that just continues to run the NFL like we wouldn't believe. And I don't know, looking in the AFC, let's have this conversation. Who is out there that can really press the Chiefs? I think the Bills are out of that conversation.
Ravens?
Ravens, sure, but we know Lamar Jackson is not a good playoff performer.
Texans?
Maybe, but... Man, we're talking about year two of a rebuild, and they're way ahead of schedule. Are they going to be that good by the time they get to the playoffs? They don't have the same experience the Chiefs have. I think that's the team I would point to.
The Texans.
But that's more of a projection than anything else, and I don't think they would be able to get over top of the Chiefs. Chiefs have way too much. They have that clutch gene, and they have the best coaching and best players at the most important positions.
I would say it's probably the Ravens are the closest, but like you said, there are question marks. Now, you assume that one year Lamar is going to put it together in the playoffs, and we're going to be like, oh, there it is. That's what you hope. But as of right now, yeah, they're the favorites.
It's wild.
Chargers.
All right.
What if Harbaugh gets in there behind, under center?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But on that note, very disgusting note. It's time to go ahead and get to hour number two, and we'll open it with David Cobb covering college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. Stick around.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.